Legislative Commons Committee. This is a special meeting. Time is 4:15, March 5th, 1986. Members present, Representative Navarro, Representative Hanley, and Representative Pierce, who we do not have a forum, but the purpose of this meeting is to take public testimony. At this time, I'd like to welcome the teleconference sites online and everyone who's come out to testify before the committee tonight. We certainly appreciate your input. It's a very important part of this process. I will note for the record that there is not a quorum at the committee at this time. However, we will begin taking testimony. There are several conflicting meetings tonight for the legislators, and they'll be coming and going off and on. There will always be someone here to listen. And at this time, I'd like to begin the testimony by going to Bethel and Dr. Lehman.
Yes, thank you. My name is Dr. Donald Lehman. I'm a family practice doctor employed by Bethel Family Health Services Incorporated. I want to thank the committee for allowing me the time to speak. The Bethel Family Clinic is a nonprofit freestanding clinic operating without state subsidy. We provide a broad range of medical services, including obstetrics, to residents of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, native and non-native alike. We are the only source of health care available to non-natives on the Delta. The clinic currently employs two full-time, board-certified family practice physicians. The family clinic has never been involved in any lawsuits. Despite this, the malpractice crisis continues to chase us. Our premiums over the last several years for MICA have increased dramatically. In 1984, for coverage, we paid approximately $4,300 per year. In 1985, we paid $7,400 per year. In 1986, our coverage at this point stands at $22,127. It may increase later this year. By 1986, it may double. By 1987, it may double. We were told that the hefty rate increase was because the clinic did obstetrics. Yes, we do obstetrics. We do approximately 35 to 40 deliveries a year. These are all low-risk deliveries. We already screen out all the high-risk patients and send them on into Anchorage to deliver. If our premiums doubled to 40-plus thousand per year, it would effectively mean that it would cost $1,000 for each delivery just for the malpractice coverage. The clinic is nonprofit with a bare bones budget. We're nonprofit in every sense of the word. We just can't absorb rate increases like that. Where would the money come from? What are our options? One, we could increase our fees for obstetrics. We've already raised obstetrical fees by $300 this year. Would we have to raise them by $1,000 per delivery? Secondly, we could stop doing obstetrics at all. This would put us in the ridiculous position of refusing to deliver patients in Bethel. They would therefore either have to fly to Anchorage for delivery or would unsafely deliver unattended in Bethel or in the villages. Lastly, we could go naked, that is, without malpractice coverage at all. In this instance, if there was a case of malpractice, the patient would have no recourse at all to recover damages from our nonprofit clinic. In all three of these scenarios, it is the patient consumer who is the victim, not the doctor, not the clinic, not the insurance company. Clearly, something must be done. I strongly urge you to pass House Bill 532 to pass at this session. I don't expect tort reform to be of any immediate benefit to consumers. These benefits will take time. This is a tort reform will hurt the residents of Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and all the residents of the state for years to come. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lehman, for your testimony. I note the presence for the record of Representative Red Boucher. Also, I want to notify people out there that due to time constraints, I'm going to have to ask that you limit your testimony, your initial testimony, to about 5 minutes. And then if you have more that you wish to offer, either submit it in writing if you possibly could, or if we have time remaining at the end of the meeting after everyone has had an opportunity, we will go back around to those who wish to offer additional testimony. And at this time, I'll go to Anchorage, and the first participant there, Lori Hollowell.
The participant is now approaching.
opportunity to speak on House Bill 532 this afternoon. My name is Maury Hollowell, and I am president of Yukon Equipment, Inc. Yukon Equipment is a distributor of construction equipment and supplies throughout the state of Alaska. We are in our 41st year of doing business in the state. With your help in addressing tort reform, we will prosper another 41 years. There have been many articles in the papers recently, and by the media in general, on the skyrocketing cost of insurance. The industry is being singled out for the medical profession, the municipalities, the air taxi operators, and the daycare centers, to name a few. My purpose in talking to you is to add one more industry to the list, and that is the construction machinery industry. As an example, our cost of product liability went from under $10,000 in January 1985 to over $50,000 in August. The first of this year, our general property went from $9,000 to $24,000. Obviously, we cannot keep in business with these constant increases in premiums. In going through our increased telephone directory, I count 25 pages in the yellow pages of attorneys. In those 25 pages are 12 quarter-page ads of attorneys specializing in product liability and personal injuries. At least 9 of them advertise that they will take cases on a percentage basis and or no money down for suing. There's something morally wrong when we have a legal system that encourages lawsuits for quick personal gain instead of justice. What is needed is for judges in the bar to return to the ancient wisdom of the common law and torts. There shall be no liability without fault. I strongly urge you to support House Bill 532 this session, as it becomes the very lifeblood of our entire way of life. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Holloway, for your testimony. Still in Anchorage, the next participant, Catherine Bigler.
I'm Catherine Bigler, president of Mad Motors Against Drunk Driving, the Anchorage chapter. I'm very much opposed, as is Mad across the country, opposed to tort reform as it's written. Reform is needed in the insurance industry, but it must not be at the expense of the victims again. Victims are victimized through the judicial system, by the defendant, and now possibly by tort reform. We have to remember, as the gentleman before me just said, that he said that lawyers are advertising for clients and to sue people, but that's not so. You know, most victims have never even heard of contingency fees or had anything to do with a lawyer before, so you don't know what to do, and you don't even know if you can afford it. And the only way that some victims can afford an attorney is by the contingency fee. If you pass a tort reform like this, that means only the wealthy can go after the insurance or sue. They will not be able to hire an attorney. If there's a $250 cap put on pain and suffering, what happens to the person or person that the breadwinner is killed on the roadway, and you have the rest of the children, all these people that are left to be taken care of, and they are only allowed to sue for punitive damages? You have to remember, if there's a death with a drunk driver, it's the state's case, not the family's case, against the defendant. The only way that they can go after the defendant is by punitive damages. And if that's awarded to the state, what rights have they? They're suffering again. I will say in close that I'm very much against the tort reform as it's written. I think we need to do a lot of studying. I hope you'll appoint a task force to study the issue, and maybe we can come up with something that's acceptable by everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'd like to take at this time one more witness from Anchorage, Stephen Smith.
My name is Stephen Smith. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm Director of Operations for Alaska Helicopters Incorporated. I'm also the past president of the Alaska Air Carriers Association. We just recently had our convention in Juneau. As you know, we've hit the hill. We've talked to many of the legislators. I am here urging the passage of House Bill 32 this session. We feel that no new commissions, is from Alaska Helicopters. I'm speaking. Need to be formed to study this any further. It's been studied to death. The situation in the aviation community is critical. But we also realize that there is no quick panacea for this, these insurance premiums that people are experiencing. We realize that there will be no reduction over the short term. It may take upwards of 2 to 3 years. And as I say, we expect things to get worse before they get better. We urge you, our company urges you to do something in this session, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith, for your testimony. Tony Marie Smith in Anchorage. Also note for the record, there are presence of Representative Collins.
Insurance. Due to a come through the Forest Service, we were compelled to get insurance, as well as Lake Lodge, since we are located in the, on the forest, we had to get insurance. Now, I am a person that believes that in my particular case, we should be allowed to operate without insurance. And the reason for this is that Bear Lake Lodge was built to be a safe and secure place in which to cater to the public. It was not built with the idea of getting insurance to handle all cases of injury or death due to slipshod workmanship or negligence in the equipment or guiding services provided by the lodge. It is with this performance of operation in mind and doing business for 38 years without even a bruised limb that we are now being penalized through the necessity of insurance, which of course means we have to penalize our guests in order to pay the wanted insurance service. The question, as I see it, is why should we or anyone else have to pay for a condition that has probably been brought on by persons, anyone else's welfare, so long as he or she, the owners and operators, will be kept safe and secure through insurance? I feel that the federal government is doing me an injustice by making it mandatory that we have liability insurance before accepting guests at Bear Lake. We at Bear Lake are more concerned with the safety and well-being of our guests and letting some insurance broker try to patch up the injury with insurance dollars. I might add, too, that since the only way you get into Bear Lake Lodge is either by trail or by plane, and the insurance now, in order to travel by our taxi office here in Southeast, is getting prohibited. I would suggest that it could be possible to arrange a different system than insurance for those people that want to ride under insurance, or probably put a situation where the airlines could set up their safety air miles, so that people would have some idea what kind of operation they're flying with. And this would help probably everybody here in Southeast. I thank you for permitting me to be heard, and I hope something can be done for people that do not want insurance, and like in my particular case, be no reason for it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nelson, for your testimony. At this time, I'd like to go to Fairbanks and Cesar Vaughn.
My name is Cesar Vaughn, and I'd like to speak against House Bill number 532. I have a 4.5-year-old child. He's one of a twin who got extended brain damage, and I feel this bill is actually putting a cap, you know, is not right as far as loss of enjoyment of life. You know, to see a kid, you know, he's one of a twin, and my other twin looks at him, and I can see he wonders, you know, why his brother's like that. And just recently he had a gastrostomy put in him, you know, to get him through his stomach, and his twin would stay away, you know. And it's very hard to describe, you know, to be, you know, how can you measure it? It's almost immeasurable. All I have to say, again, I oppose House Bill number 532. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vaughn, for your testimony. At this time, I'd like to go to Matt Sue and Noel Woods.
Thank you. This is Noel Woods. I'm an Palmer General Contractor and Developer. There are quite a few bills relating to insurance coming before the session, and I'm going to just jump generalizing, because I'm sure no bill is yet in the final form. One, I'm really concerned that policies are not available for such usual limits as a 1 million umbrella policy. When I'm contacting my carrier, he just laughs, and he says, well, he says, let's try for 500,000. This is contrary, I know, to some of the testimony that you've been given, that the shirt is available at a price. In my experience, it is not available. Two, I'm concerned that difficulty with insurance will cause some enterprises to go bare, or naked has been expressed, with that's without insurance, causing problems for honest operators because of joint and several liability is now law. This is going to have several effects. One, it reduces the total amount of insurance in force to cover a potential claim. It will also potentially increase premiums for those policies that are in effect if we keep the joint and several liability as it is now. And in the short run, it will enable those who elect to go bare to have an unfair price advantage when contracting against those other honest contractors. And that's basically my stand, and I appreciate the chance to testify. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Woods, for your testimony. At this time, I'd like to go to Soldotna and Rich Undercoffler.
Rich Undercoffler, City Manager in Soldotna, speaking on behalf of the Soldotna City Council. How are you, Mike?
Real good, Rich. Thanks.
The Soldotna City Council last week did pass a resolution in support of the legislative agenda advocated by the Citizens for Tort Reform group, and I'm looking over House Bill 532, that seems to be the one, and Mike, I'd encourage your committee to pass the 532 out of your committee, so hopefully something could happen this session. In the case of municipalities, we expect immediate benefits from some of these reforms, because in all probability we are not going to be able to buy insurance on renewal due to the potential of joint and several liability claims. So we expect the city of Soldotna taxpayers are going to be the insurers from here on out, and we expect some immediate benefits. So just to give you a little background on the city's situation is that our insurance has gone from about $73,000 a year last year to $270,000 this year, and next year we're advised that we're not even going to be able to buy it at any price. Putting that in taxpayers' terms, we're paying more than $1 million right now just for insurance premiums. It also is affecting problems of insurance, are also affecting everyone that does business for local governments and state governments. Consulting engineering firms are not able to procure, or a lot of them have not been able to procure professional liability insurance. The cost of aircraft liability insurance and operations relating to our airports are just driving air carriers out of business, and it's reported here last week that the cost of delivering a baby here in Soldotna has increased just $500 per delivery just for our doctor's malpractice insurance. So, speaking on behalf of the City Council and myself, we would like to see hospital number 532 moved out of committee, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Rich. At this time, I'd like to go to Kodiak and Kurt Ledoux.
Kurt Ledoux from Kodiak. I am an attorney who deals almost primarily admiralty cases, and as a former fisherman, I'm very concerned about the high rate that boat owners now are paying. However, I'd like to clarify one point, is that it appears that many boat owners feel that House Bill 532 will somehow lower their insurance rates. It will not. This is because that admiralty law is controlled by federal law. Federal law controls admiralty insurance rates or admiralty insurance law. It also controls damages. Even though federal action is trying to state court, the state court must apply admiralty law. I think that the better solution is to go with the, or the post to be, go behind the insurance pools, such as the starting of Senate Bill 442, where the state can not only provide assistance, but they provide the reinsurance. As you've probably been told many times, insurance companies right now take about 40% just administrative costs, whereas insurance pools take approximately 5%.
time, I'd like to go back to Anchorage and take testimony from Steve Wilbert. This is Representative Lauren Juno. We're not hearing anything from Anchorage.
Yes, my name is Dave Sundell. I'm the executive director of the Air Carriers Association, sitting in for Steve Wilbert, who was unable to be here at this time. I would like to read the resolution that was adopted at the convention in Juneau, February 13th, 14th, and 15th, and then comment about the criticalness of the insurance problem as it relates to the Air Carriers Association. The resolution reads as follows. Whereas the slowing of the Alaskan economy, the reduction of mail and passenger subsidies, the deregulation of the airline industry, and the rising operating costs of business have all contributed to financial strain in the Alaskan aviation industry, and whereas the dramatic escalation of insurance premiums has caused insurance expenses to be the highest operating expense after personnel, and whereas the expense must either be passed on to the public, or where this is impossible due to intense competition, has resulted in unprofitable or bankrupt operations, and whereas without relief, the existing insurance crisis will leave some parts of rural Alaska without air service and result in higher fares for urban Alaskans, and whereas the prime cause of the insurance crisis is an unreasonable high award and liability suit, and now therefore be resolved that the Alaskan Air Carriers Association, assembled in convention in Juneau, emphatically endorsed House Bill 532, and Senate Bill 377, which will provide significant long-term relief on insurance rates, while at the same time protecting the rights of the consumers. I'd like to just add that I called the FAA this afternoon to find out in the last 6 months how many operations have ceased to operate, and this is just a partial list. ProMec ceased operations on the 6th of January, 86. Matsu Bush Flying Service on the 28th of October, 85. Holland Aviation on the 10th of October, 85. Tundra Air, the 1st of January, or the 15th of January, 86, out of Barrow. Others, Flylight, the ceased operation from Kodiak in August of 86. Others, I haven't substantiated this, just got word this afternoon. Bay Air of Naknek, Bay Helicopters of Fairbanks, Delta Aviation, World Air of Valdez, Todd Air Service of Ketchikan, Ellis Air in Glen Allen, Revilla, and the list could go on and on. We are in a major crisis as far as the air carriers are concerned, and we ask that you adopt and pass out of your committee House Bill 532. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Durkin, for your testimony. Still in Anchorage, still in Anchorage, John Durkin will be the next witness, and thank you, Mr. Sundell.
Mr. Durkin apparently is no longer here. If we can perhaps move on to Ella Hackett.
Okay, that would be fine.
Thank you. Yes. I would like to speak today in regard to House Bill 532. I would like to speak against the passage of House Bill 532 for the reason in regards to injured individuals who have been injured by no direct action of their own seem to be the vast majority in the conversations that have been taking place today. I understand that the insurance industry is impacting business. And I understand that insurance rates are going up at 200, 300, 400, 500 to 1,000% or is not available to a lot of industries in Alaska. And I understand what this is doing. But we must not forget the individuals who have been, their life has been altered permanently for the rest of their life. We must not forget the individuals whose quality of life has been reduced. And what you're asking to do in House Bill 532 is to penalize these individuals again by being injured. No one looks upon themselves as a potential victim, and this is the problem.
problem. This is a silent group of people that are not coming forward and speaking at these hearings is because no one sees themselves as a potential victim. I don't see myself as a potential victim. Once I go get in my car and drive home tonight, I could be chilled, I could be maimed, I could be left paralyzed in a matter of seconds. None of us know this. Next time we get on an airplane, or we're going to work, or we're walking around our home, well, a lot of the accidents happen. I think if someone causes an injury to an individual, and they should be held responsible for that injury, and they should be held monetarily responsible for that injury, because that is our system of the way the system has evolved to compensate people. You can't give them an eye back once the eye is gone. You can't give them a leg back. You can't remove brain damage by the wave of a hand. You have to live with that on a daily basis. These non-victims, people that have not been made or are not victims today, you are taking rights away from them. You are limiting their ability to have a quality of life. Now, as Virginia Collins, who sits on your commission, knows, the quality of life for injured people is the determinant in how long they live. If they do not have quality care and a quality life, they will die sooner from infection and the ravages of the trauma that has been beset upon them when a lot of the time it's done by a third party, someone that they may have been an innocent bystander, or it may be a scenario of, you know, passenger on an aircraft, or et cetera. Now, why are we here today? Why does this crisis of insurance and court reform evolve? Well, if you folks remember, back in 1975, the insurance company started raising the rates of doctors dramatically. The doctors all went on strike. I remember them going on strike in Alaska and threatening to go on strike. And out of that came a medical malpractice panel statute, which has been in place since 1975. It has not affected the verdicts. Court reform will not reduce your premium at all. And if you believe that, you know, you're looking as high in the sky, it will not reduce your premiums. And don't let anyone tell you it will. You don't see any insurance company guaranteeing to lower their premium if tort reform is enacted. You will see it nowhere. No insurance representative will tell you that they will reduce rates. This will reduce rates. You go out and ask them. That's why this bill is so dangerous. What it does is it gives these people more profits, it minimizes their exposure, and minimizes their responsibility, but then it double impacts the individual that's been injured. There is no guarantee it's going to reduce rates. And if you can get the insurance industry to guarantee that this is going to reduce rates, then you've got something. Right now you have no trade-off except for you're giving people's rights away, and you're getting nothing in return for it. And this is the thing that is dramatic. It has to be pushed to the Alaska public, is that their rights are going to be given away by you folks if you don't protect them. And that's what you're down there to do. You're down there to protect their rights because you're representatives. I hear legislators say, well, my constituents really want this legislation passed. It's showing them. Well, they may think they do, but they don't realize what they're giving away to have this legislation passed. And this is where it's a great responsibility for you folks on the committee to look out for the whole of the people of Alaska and work to make the insurance companies not allowed to cancel people's insurance policy without 120 days notice, without a legitimate reason. The insurance cancellation should be based on claims made experience of the individual company or individual. It should not be categorically across the board, which they've done in our country today, not in Alaska only, but nationwide. They have targeted doctors, they have targeted daycare centers, they have targeted lodge operators, they have targeted fishing guys, they have targeted bars. And these people, the reason they've targeted them is they know the reaction they got from the doctors in 75. They got them pissed off. They got with a program. They got laws passed. Then they're impacting the most amount of people in our country by targeting these select companies, air carriers. Because a lot of marginal air carriers are going down the tubes. They would have gone down the tubes anyway. But in regards to other air carriers, the cost that is being subjected to their insurance policies is not a relevant claims made cost. It's across the board rate. Now, these rates should not be put into effect. Number one, we have an insurance commissioner. We have an insurance commission. They have to approve all rates. No rates have gone in front of the insurance commissioner. They've categorically raised these without front of the insurance commissioner. Now, that's illegal, number one. Number two, the insurance commissioner, we should have an actuary individual, that either as a commissioner or on our state, one of the commissioners used as a consultant basis. We do not have. The insurance industry in the 40s moved very vigorously to get out from underneath federal control and get under only state control because they knew the states didn't have the capacity to regulate them and control them, and they don't. They're the largest industry in the country. They're very rich and very powerful, and they know that the small states acting on their own cannot control it because they can do whatever they want, and it's been demonstrated in our state and in our nation. Thank you for the time. I went over a little. I strongly urge you do not pass this bill. We need a Blue Ribbon Commission appointed with injured people on it, with people from the finance side, people from the defense side, people from business side, and we need to look at what some other states like the state of Washington has done and in investigating this problem and not just carte blanche roll over to the benefit of the insurance company and the detriment of the people of Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I've been informed that the Division of Insurance does at times contract out for actuary. They also approve the rates. But this time I would like to go to Ketchikan and Bob Garza.
Mr. Garza is approaching the mic.
My name is Bob Garza, and I'm here to, I'm just going to be redundant, and she is the same lady, and I'm here to testify in reference to high-risk mortgage insurance, which is very difficult for disabled people to get. I'm especially speaking for disabled veterans. The last time I testified on House Bill 540, and there's another bill, I believe it's Bill 547 that also addresses a law of high-risk insurance that was introduced in the state of Minnesota in part of our 1976. As I mentioned the last time I testified, this makes a, I've been testifying in reference to this matter to sound like a broken record, but it goes back to 1977. I might also say that Murkowski has introduced a bill in Congress in reference to the same thing for veterans. And like I said, being a vice commander for Southeast Alaska for disabled American veterans, that's who I'm speaking especially for. But there are other people that are disabled, not able to get insurance. Now, one way the state should look at high-risk insurance is that they finance a house for a veteran, and if he's able to get a high-risk mortgage insurance, that the state's going to be able to get his money back, and that veteran is going to be able to use a roof over his family's debt. Like I said, I don't want to sound redundant, and I know that most of you that are there probably listened to what I had to say the last time. I did mention the fact that out of 4,542 veteran loans that existed, and this was back in 1983, I have been busy with other correspondents. I testified the last time that I contacted in excess of 20 different life insurance companies that they all turned me down. Presently, the state, not presently, but 1983, financed 4,542 houses for veterans. Out of that, only 1,866 qualified. The other 2,696 are in the same shape I'm in. So, like I said, I don't want to sound redundant, but I guess the squeaky will get the grease, and this goes clear back to 1977. And another issue in reference to Aetna, who has canceled insurance for fast phones in Alaska. like fast boats, they didn't say over there what a fast boat means, but they did require me, they canceled me out, so all the states would give me insurance, providing I get a marine surveyor, and they provide the insurance, but there you hear them go again, you know, the Aetna, I don't know how they got their foot in every way, shape, or form you can think of. They're in with the state. As an ex-negotiator for labor contracts. I noted most of the contracts in my early years of negotiation, almost everything was Aetna. I see the state is still with Aetna. And I'm talking about the veterans loans. They still carry Aetna. So, I guess that's the extent of my testimony. I just want to make sure that I mentioned this high-risk insurance. It's very important. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Garza, for your testimony. Still in Ketchikan, Don Bell.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen of the House Labor and Commerce Committee, my name is Don Bell. I'm the president of Alaska Timber Exchange Management Corporation, which is a reciprocal insurance company licensed in the state of Alaska to provide workman's comp insurance to the employers in the timber industry. This year, in 1986, the cost of reinsurance for our company was increased from $300,000 to $800,000. The reinsurance carriers also dictated a huge increase in premium rates charged to our loggers. The logging rate, the code classification is 2702, has increased from $16.50 per $100 of payroll in 1985 to $26.60 for $100 of payroll in 1986. I'm not here supporting any specific legislation except to let you know what the high cost of insurance has done to the timber industry. And at this point, we have only recently found out that the $26.60 is what it's going to cost our loggers for the logging rate this year, and we don't know what it's going to be able to do with them. Which will help the timber industry reduce its high premium rate, which will also decrease the premium rates for all the other insurance in Alaska, and I thought it might be of value to mention that we are one company that's interested in reducing the rates to our people, and whoever was who spoke just before, Bob Garza mentioned that the insurance companies weren't interested in doing reducing rates. I don't think that that's quite true in all cases. It certainly is not true with our company, and we just would like you to know what it's done to us, and we would certainly appreciate any help we can get from the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. I've been asked to have you call tomorrow the Division of Insurance. Deputy Director of the Division of Insurance. Their number is 465-2515. Representative Collins?
Hi, this is Virginia Collins. I just wanted to say hi to Mr. Bell, and also to get a response from him here. The ATIE has been described as being a model of pooling risk, and I'm wondering, and the image has been has worked very well, and I'm wondering if you would have any comments on how well you have fared by forming the ATIE. Thank you.
Well, Virginia, we've as you know, we started in 1980, as a reciprocal insurance company, we're only permitted to insure the members of Alaska Loggers Association,
Insurance crisis and tort reform are two totally separate subjects.
right to a jury trial in Canada. Punitive damages are extremely limited, allowed only in intentional torts as opposed to willful ones, the wanton acts here in Alaska. And there are other limits on tort recoveries in Ontario. However, Ontario is experiencing the same insurance crisis that we are here in Alaska. Doctors are complaining, daycare centers are complaining. Across the board, people are complaining about the system. However, the system of tort justice in Ontario has been in place for quite a while. Another example is mortgage insurance, experiencing great difficulties right now. There are no tort recoveries in the mortgage industry. These are a result of investment income and premium rates and the insurance pricing situation that has been explained to you at past hearings. Another example is what occurred in Iowa. I believe Lowell Duncan testified by teleconference that if he didn't, he was the Senate Majority Leader who shepherded through tort reform twice in Iowa. No change occurred. He is now running for governor in Iowa, and he has turned around the other way and is now arguing against tort reform. In Pennsylvania, municipalities enacted tort reform. We granted immunity, sovereign immunity to municipalities in Pennsylvania, except for 8 specific causes of action, and they put a $500,000 cap on judgments there. There were other things done. However, municipalities are experiencing the same problem in Pennsylvania that we are here in Alaska. In California, there was a medical malpractice tort reform. This same tort reform was enacted to some extent in Alaska and to some extent throughout the entire 50 states. However, it was widespread and broad in California. However, in November 1985, there were many physicians testifying before a Senate Health Committee in California about 500% increases in medical malpractice premium rates. Now, tort reform has been enacted for quite some time in California. However, it has had no effect. Washington State Commission on Insurance took a look at the situation and came to the conclusion that it is insurance regulation and insurance reform that is needed, not tort reform. The Citizens Coalition for Tort Reform themselves have occasionally made statements to that same effect. Bill G, who is the treasurer for the Citizens Coalition for Tort Reform, stated in a public debate that there are no guarantees that tort reform will have any effect on insurance rates. He indicated that he never said that it would affect insurance rates and that it will not lower them. However, they support tort reform for its own inherent merits. I would like to reiterate that this should be separated from the insurance crisis. If tort reform is to be debated, let it be done. However, now we are trying to solve the problem of insurance, and we should stick to that problem. A lot of the tort reform is the product of insurance lobbying efforts. Today, in the mail, I received from the Insurance Information Institute, that's the III, a large insurance organization, what they call the, quote, Civil Justice Reform Kit, close quote. This is a thick kit of, quote, press releases, speeches, news articles, questions and answers, pamphlets, strategies to use on your legislature, etc., aimed at, quote, tort reform, close quote. Now, the insurance industry is after this to enhance their profits and to make even more money the next time that this cycle picks up, which it has already begun to do. There have been organizations that have formed a coalition against this insurance lobby. This is called the Coalition for Consumer Justice. This coalition currently is comprised of approximately 25 groups and just formed, and it is still growing. I won't run down the list of 25 groups. However, I do want to mention just a few that are significant and should be of significance to this committee. Public Citizen, the United Steelworkers of America, the AFL-CIO, Industrial Union Department, Women's Legal Defense Fund, National Insurance Consumer Organization, Government Accountability Project, Victims of Medical Malpractice, Occupational Health and Safety Law Project, and there are many others. I urge this committee strongly to not accept that tort reform will be the answer to our current insurance crisis. I urge this committee to take a look at the significant and weighty evidence available from other states, other countries, studies, and insurance information that indicates that tort reform will not change current insurance crisis. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Costin, for your testimony. If you would not mind, would you please a copy of the Insurance Institute packet for our review? And also, if you could send us the list that you're reading from on the Coalition for Consumers.
I would be happy to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Still in Anchorage, Howard Thomas.
Virginia Collins. Hello, Virginia.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Addressing this very important issue to your committee today. I'm here representing the American Society of Civil Engineers. I'm the current president of the Anchorage branch, which has 600 members. These are members throughout private industry and in the public sector who belong to small firms, medium and large firms, all of whom have been impacted greatly by this insurance crisis. We have passed a resolution in one of our recent meetings, and I'd like to read it for you. Whereas one of the greatest problems facing businesses, individuals, and government entities in Alaska is limited availability of liability insurance and a dramatic rise in liability premiums, and whereas legislative remedies are needed to restore predictability and affordability to liability insurance programs, now therefore be resolved by the Anchorage branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers that it supports tort reform. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas, for your testimony. Still in Anchorage, Ted Lamb.
He's had to leave.
Okay, then the next participant would be Jean Lagusca.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Gene Lagusca. I have a prepared statement. I also have some remarks to make with regard to certain key issues. In interest of time, I'd like to submit my prepared statement to you. I'd like to highlight certain aspects of it at this particular point, and then should time permit at the end of the hearing this evening, I'd like to come back to get into some of the details of my prepared statement, if that is acceptable.
That's perfectly acceptable. I would like to indicate, though, that there are about 10 or 15 more people left to testify, and I think more keep coming on as we go through this meeting. I would expect that we probably won't have time to get back around.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am business manager for Maynard & Parch. We are an architectural firm. We employ 26 people. We support House Bill 532 and Senate Bill 377. I am co-chairman of a joint ad hoc insurance committee of the AIA, which is the American Institute of Architects, and the engineering community consisting of such organizations as ASPE, ASCE, TEC, which is Professional Engineers in Private Practice, and CEC. These associations represent over 250 AE firms in the state of Alaska, who employ in excess of 3,000 people, and who support House Bill 532 and SB 377. I'm vice chairman of the Citizens Coalition for Tort Reform. The coalition represents in excess of 30 associations from Alaska. We support HB 532 and SB 377. As you can note, I'm wearing several hats. I'd first like to wear my AE hat. We support the bills because they are a needed comprehensive solution to the liability insurance crisis. It is a long-term solution that must be initiated now. It is a solution which is designed to bring predictability and affordability back into the liability insurance market. The area of AD, let me demonstrate the problem. As of December 13, 1984, 13 markets were available in which professional liability insurance, commonly known as errors and omissions insurance, could be placed. These markets were, and I'll list the firms, and I'll list also the AM Best key rating guide for those firms. The 13 firms, CNA, A plus 15, Evanston Insurance Company, A12, Fremont Indemnity Company, A15, Imperial Casualty and Indemnity Company, A15, International Surplus Lines Insurance Company, A+50, Lexington Insurance Company, A12, Lloyd's of London, Pine Top Insurance Company, Blue Ridge Insurance Company, Transport Indemnity Company, Wausau International Underwriters, Inco Insurance Services, California, Industrial
those rockets are CNA and Rockwood. Engineering for us has access to CNA and Rockwood, and a third carrier, Admiral. I can provide you with the names, the addresses, and the telephone numbers of each one of these insurance agencies for your information if you need them. I urge you to not be misled by statements made recently that there are more insurance companies operating in Alaska today than previously. That is not the case in professional liability insurance for architects and engineers. I can demonstrate our problem in another way. We have surveyed the 80 communities to compare availability and affordability of professional liability insurance in the year 1885. We have hard statistical data from 46 firms. The data clearly shows major changes. The coverage is dramatically less. I'm highlighting. Firms with annual growth revenues less than $200,000 experienced an average premium in 1985, which was 4.31 times 84 premium. Firms with an average gross revenue between $500,000 and $1 million experienced a multiplier of 2.4. Firms with higher gross revenues between $2 and $5 million experienced multipliers of 1.95. Clearly, there's a major impact on small firms. We also surveyed another element of the community, that is the extent of the premium as it related to labor cost. In 1982, the costs were approximately 73 cents per chargeable hour. In 84, the cost was $1.54. In 85, the cost was $2.09. And in 1986, the costs are averaging $4.70. I want to point out to you that the 86 costs are calculated on the basis of actual coverage. If in 86 the firms had comparable coverage to what they had in previous years, the cost would be as high as $12.34. Incidentally, the firm which was quoted that price simply couldn't afford it, and they're going bare. We also analyzed premium as a percentage of net growth. 1982, the cost of that premium was in the range of 0.9 to 2.6%. In 85, the premium range was in the range of 4.7 to 7.2%. In 86, the average range for covered cost is 10.6 to 11.6%. If in 86, comparable coverage was available, the cost would have been in the range of 13.8 to 27.1. Needless to say, you cannot afford 27.1, and you go there. I'd like to spend a few minutes wearing another hat.
Excuse me, Mr. Rebetzka. I'm going to have to ask that you please wrap up as quickly as possible and submit the rest in writing. There are a lot of people still waiting on the network to testify.
Chairman, if I may have 60 seconds, I think I can do it.
Thank you.
Number one, will rates go down if tort reform is enacted into law? Coalition has never said that. What we are saying is that Rule 82 specifically is mentioned in many Alaskan policies. According to the Division of Insurance, speak to John George, the Director of Insurance, that amendment adds $3 to $45 to policy. Eliminating the rule would position the Director of Insurance so he would no longer have to approve the surcharge. Tort reform does work in California. It needs time. It took 10 years to get through the legislative battles to prove its constitutionality. From 1975 to 1985, the medical insurance rates did rise. They rose 300% nationally, but in California, it was only 150%. A couple other items. A state-backed reinsurance program, we're told, by the Director of Insurance, would cost $100 million to set up. Opponents are saying that workman's comp will be affected. I urge you to discuss the point with former legislator, former Senator Chancey Cross. He says there is no effect. Tort reform will work, but it takes time. It took 10 years in California before the legal challenges were concluded, but it has held up. It is a positive action. It is not a bad reaction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. At this time, I'd like to go to Soldana and Dr. Frazier.
Thank you, Mike. Dr. Frazier, I am a physician in Kiev, and I also represent my wife, who is having a daycare center in Sodorna. And what I'd like to mention to you is the very hard time that having malpractice insurance as well as liability insurance for the daycare. As looking for the prices in 1985, I have to pay for malpractice insurance $3,700 for 1 meal and 2 meals, and in 1986, that has come to $11,000 for half of the coverage that we had. So, and my wife has to pay $6,000 to have 25 kids in the daycare. So, you know, that is something that I think the tax reform will help to do something. I have here a lot of the testimonies in pro and con, but it will stop the premiums escalating to the very economical sum. If nothing can be done. Thank you for the opportunity that I have to talk to you.
Thank you, Dr. Frazier, for your testimony. At this time, I'd like to go to Kodiak and Bob Stanford.
This is the moderator in Kodiak, and Mr. Stanford did have another engagement and was not able to stay to give his testimony. However, he will be attending a later telecom to give his input. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to go to Matt Sue and Lynn Coon.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cook, I believe that Mr. Brown can testify at this time.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carl Brown. I represent the Precision Aviation Flying Club at the Palmer Airport. And I want to testify from personal experience and as well as the effect that the current laws as they stand, the effect that they're having upon our operation, and I do promise to take a very short time. I'm sure that what I'd be telling about here has been said before. I come in on the tail end of the last Air Carriers Association, some comments that were being made by a representative there. Pretty much the high cost of insurance has affected us as comparing our rates, even as a flying club, which I understand as flying clubs, even in this state, have lower rates and lower overhead in regards to insurance, both haul and liability, a lot less than lower 48s. A lot less than later fixed-base operators up here in the state. However, it's still 3 to 5 times greater than what it is in the rest of the United States. Operational-wise, it constitutes on a yearly cost of better than 50% of our overhead. And I have no problem with saying that last year we grossed $89,000. Out of that, almost $50,000, 48 to be exact, constitute our insurance costs. Currently, the risk that we face as a flight school, both to our instructors as well as our mechanics and airbales. It's an open-ended type of situation. Currently, a flight instructor can be sued from the time that he graduates as a student with a private pilot license until either that new pilot dies of natural causes or the flight instructor himself does. We have one such example of that occurring not in the state of Alaska, but in the state of Texas. And that litigation, I understand, has been going on for some time. An instructor graduated a student 11 years after the time that this individual received his private pilot's license in an accident, a non-fatal. He turned around and sued his flight instructor and was successful in doing so. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association has a publication about once a month, I believe it is, that goes out to flight instructors in which they relate this particular situation. The open-ended liability against carriers and anyone in the aviation business is just plain ludicrous and uncalled for. It isn't fair to us as people who are trying to provide a public service at a reasonable cost to not have the protection against this sort of thing. Locally, police raised in the state of Alaska here a few years ago, approximately three, there was a flying club in Birchwood in which a flight instructor and a student both voluntarily got themselves into a situation in Eagle River Valley in which they tore out an aircraft against the side of the hill. It was a non-fatal accident. They had the student turn around, sued the instructor, sued the flying club, and named each individual member in the club to include the aircraft owner. Under the current legislation, this sort of nonsense is allowed to go on, and it certainly is not fair to people who recently in a standstill because they did not find anyone to write their excess liability. Now, granted, the Department of Defense and the Department of Army in particular is requiring them to carry $5 million excess liability. But when they finally could find someone to give them a quote on that $5 million excess liability, I was going to call spend $10,000 a year per aircraft. Needless to say, anyone even with an oil well in their backyard can afford to pay out that kind of premium on aircraft and then pay regular liability and regular hull coverage in addition to that. The cost of aircraft insurance in the private sector is equally obnoxious. Recently, a private pilot friend of mine got a quote on an aircraft for which that he has a sufficient number of hours, several hundred hours to make and model. And on a $21,000 airplane, he was quoted $15,000 a year. The high cost and the risk leads to three possible alternatives for those of us in the commercial sector, and to including the private sector to some degree. We have a choice, and one of those, of course, is go out of business, as many others have, because we cannot afford the insurance, period. That or fly with no insurance. So if an individual is injured or someone suffers loss, due to negligence or something of this sort, they're not going to get compensated. You can't take water off the stove, but you turn it. It's just that plain simple. Or the third possible alternative, and heaven forbid that anyone who undertakes the responsibility of 135 operator or 121 operator, the FAR is a scheduled service carrier, they compromise the high quality of service, for example, maintenance, in order to pay for the high cost of insurance. Currently, to run simple four-plate aircraft, a single pilot, owner-operator air taxi service, which that I myself own in conjunction to the flying club, we're looking at $6,000 to $10,000 a year for airport to airport. We're not talking about bush trips. We're not talking about landing out in the middle of nowhere for apple bars or anything of this sort. We're talking about established airports such as Birchwood, Palmer, Wasilla, and many others. Basically, you maintain a very high degree of safety practices and such. In general, and the operators and the people involved in the professional aviation world up here in the Matthew area, I have yet to find anyone in the aviation world who objects to the payment of losses to any claimant, but we object vehemently to paying for luxuries not possible to be earned in an individual's lifetime, or especially the same to a lawyer. And in regards to this, even though there's a lot of bitterness, perhaps felt or implied by some of the tort reform supporters and by the legislation in favor of tort reform, no one objects to anybody making a decent living. But what we are pushing for is better compensation practices to the injured, to an individual who has suffered loss, to eliminate exposure to frivolous litigation. And I emphasize that term frivolous, just the same as I emphasize the term more compensation to the victim or the injured, and in turn lower the cost of insurance. And Mr. Chairman, granted that no one has ever guaranteed that the rates would go down insofar as the insurance is concerned, and we are indeed in a very severe insurance crisis. And to be quite blunt about the matter, our insurance renewal comes up 1 June, and from what we're hearing right now from our current broker, we have no guarantee that 2 June that we're going to be in operation because of what is currently facing us and the possibilities of anywhere from 50 to 100% increase in our insurance. But we feel that before we can complain about prices at a grocery store, that we need to do what we can to lower the grocer's overhead so that 99% of his cost is not going out to overhead. Then we can turn around and raise a complaint about high prices. And I believe that tort reform, certainly we are definitely in favor of it, will certainly limit the overhead, eliminate the excuse for the high cost in insurance, and hopefully afford better compensation to the injured in turn, which the tort reform bills and all of its supporting legislation is certainly designed to do. If we can lower that exposure to the insurance companies in turn, be at least a higher cost to the public, and there's going to be no question about it. Our insurance goes up, and if we are able to stay in business, we're going to have to raise our rates. For the people who are paranoid, living up here, who constantly are afraid of becoming victims, and in turn the tort reform does not go through, and our insurance does stay up, then in turn the costs are going to have to go up as well. It's the only way that anyone can stay in business as such. And from a personal standpoint, I have been a victim myself, and yet I've been very satisfied with receiving compensation for what I have lost and not trading off Volkswagen for a Cadillac as such. And certainly, as I said before, I finish up by stating, too, that no one in the aviation world that I have talked to is against giving proper compensation and full compensation to an injured party or someone who has suffered loss as a result of negligence, misconduct, errors or omissions, or anything else that they like to attach to it as far as the title of things are concerned. We're looking for an equitable way of proper compensation as well. But we have to start somewhere, and currently tort reform is step number one, and I have no problem with saying either. Step number two will in turn be going after to lower the high cost on insurance as it currently is. Dr. N.J. Kuhn, was not able to stay around because of a previous engagement as moderator here. It stated I do have a typewritten statement that he has, and because of the time problem there, we'll have it sent down through the office here as such to allow other testimony as such. I appreciate your patience and your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brown, for your testimony. At this time, and please do send us Dr. Kuhn's testimony. This time, I'd like to go to Bethel and Doug Larson.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Doug Larson, a spokesperson for Harold Air. And speaking from Harold Air, I'd like to point out that we serve five basic hubs in the states, Fairbanks, Port Yukon, Galena, Aniak, and Bethel. And have been serving the state since 1970 and employ over 200 people. And as a spokesperson for Harold Air, I'd like to state that we support House Bill 532, one, because it's a comprehensive solution to the problems of insurance that are plaguing the entire air carrier as an industry-wide. We feel that this bill is a comprehensive, not a piecemeal solution, which will not work. A classic example just in the Bethel area alone is Sea Air being forced out of business in the Bethel area due to the high cost of liability insurance. Sea Air is no longer in the Bethel area,